Hello, my name is Philippe Beaulieu-Brossard, co-president of the Archipelago of Design, AOD, and a welcome to this new episode of the Tension podcast series. Today we are going to dig deeper into the tension between two fundamental approaches to future thinking in defense and security. The first one is forecasting, focused on a short time frame based on probabilities. And the second one is foresighting, focused on a more transformational approach towards the future. And it's my pleasure to greet our two guests today to explore this topic further. The first one is Balkan Devlin from Carleton University. Balkan is also director of the Transatlantic Program at the McDonnell Laurier Institute, and he is also professional forecaster for Good Judgment. Welcome, Balkan. And my second guest is Donna Dupont, a longtime contributor to AOD, and she is a foresight strategist and founder at Purple Compass. She's also principal of the School of International Futures. And also, she's done a lot of work on climate and security, crime, space, and mining. Welcome. So first, before we delve into the weeds of what is foresight, what is forecasting, and why they cannot be friends, or how could they be friends, let's start a bit with your story. Let's start with you, Donna. So can you tell us a bit about what brought you to take strategic foresight seriously?
That's a good question. So my pathway to foresight was a little unexpected. So in my former role, I was an emergency management professional, province of Ontario. And in that role, you respond to a lot of different provincial level emergencies. I worked for the Ministry of Health. And so if there was a fire or a flood, you know, the health agencies would also be activated as well. And so we had to understand a lot of what was happening in the system in terms of complexity. We had to mobilize a lot of different resources, logistics. So there was a lot of uncertainty and complexity in that type of work environment. And for me, stepping into an emergency operations center and trying to understand that in real time, make sense of it, and then to grab insights, to extract insights, to decide or to make recommendations, right, in terms of operations or to support planning, it was a very challenging skill set for someone who is not used to working with system complexity. And so it really challenged me in the sense that my traditional planning tools didn't always work well in those types of situations. And although, you know, we were able to do, our team did a pretty good job, I was always searching for better tools. And I was asking a lot of questions, and I was trying to think about how we can anticipate in longer windows, because if we can anticipate longer term, maybe we can make better decisions and we don't have to respond to all these emergencies. So that's how it started. So a lot of questions, a lot of conversations, and eventually it led me to a conversation with a friend of mine who said she was studying strategic foresight and innovation. And I didn't even know that was something you could study. So once I learned about it, I was hooked, and I guess the rest is history.
Amazing. And back to you, Balkan. We have the same background in political science, international relations, foreign policy. And I think we can say that, future thinking in general, forecasting is forbidden in that field. So what made you go into a forbidden direction like exploring forecasting?
Thanks, Philippe. Couple things I would say. First, in a more dispositional way, I was always interested in trying to figure out what might happen in the future. You know, what lies ahead. A lot of people, I think, in this field, when it comes to foresight or forecasting or general future studies, are also quite interested in sci-fi. And that was definitely one when I was younger. One of the things that pushed me, but even in my academic work, I was constantly interested in and actually utilize game theoretic thinking in my work. I wanted to understand the actions and what actions different actors might take, and can we make estimations about different actors' actions in a given strategic setting. So when I saw the email announcement back in 2011, coming from U.S. intelligence community, that they're having a geopolitical forecasting competition organized by Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity, IARPA, I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity for me to test whether my model of the world actually reflects reality. Right, I do think that certain things work in a particular way. If you take particular decisions, it would lead to these results, and we can actually, you know, assign probabilities to it. But this was a good opportunity for me to jump into that one, and I did take part in that IARPA geopolitical forecasting competition, and then get into more professionally in the probabilistic forecasting domain. But like I said, I was always interested in figuring out how actors, be it humans, individuals, states, companies, will act, and what will be the consequences of those actions. So,
Donna, you've been developing an expertise in strategic foresight for several years now. When somebody asked you about a concrete example of how, you know, this added value in your work, like what is one of the best stories that you can share?
So one of my favorite stories, and it's a recent story, a recent experience, is a project I was recently on concerning space. And this is one of my roles with the School of International Futures. And so this particular space project was all about understanding drivers of change for the global space system. And this was a really interesting project because it allowed us to take a step back. And it allowed us to understand all the factors that are driving change in a very complex system, and all the different actors within defense and outside of defense. There's a large commercial element as well. And then there's a lot of conversations about different ways, agency of using space for a variety of different purposes. And how do you improve access? And not just access for defense and security, but now access to other countries who are historically haven't been part of the space domain. So all of these conversations really were interesting because it allowed to understand that there were so many different drivers of change in the space system, and also a lot of different actors. And that when you look at a system this complex, you need to really understand some of the different domains and boundaries that you're going to explore, and some of the tension points. And there were a lot in this to navigate through. And because space is such, it's a newer area, where a lot of people don't necessarily have a lot of knowledge, I think it's an exciting area where there is a lot of opportunity to collaborate in different ways and share knowledge and intelligence. So from a foresight project, it was a really great opportunity to learn a lot about the domains of change that are driving space, and also what the landscape looks like. And from that, there will be opportunities to explore different scenarios, foresight scenarios of things that can emerge, different potential operating examples, scenarios of operating environments, and to stress test what that could look like and new ideas for the future. So for me, that's exciting because it combines a lot of different actors, and it really touches on a lot of different tensions between military and public and private sector actors, commercialization of different innovations in the area. So I'm excited to learn more about space, specifically the Earth observation capabilities of space and the role of emergency management in really being able to leverage some of that intelligence from those satellites and help to bring it into our work that we do with respect to understanding risk, vulnerability, and the changing landscape.
Fascinating. And yes, if there is a domain that can really use future thinking as the space domain, right? Because everything is in development right now, and we need people to take risk to further develop this domain. And what about you, Balkan? Like, what is your a great story about your forecasting experience that you could share with the audience?
I can think of a couple of them, and in terms of different audiences. One, I would say, I think would resonate with a lot of people is the one when we started forecasting with good judgment on COVID and COVID rates and whether this would be a global pandemic or not. We were quite early when the first news are coming out of Wuhan about this new disease in our team. That's sort of the basis of really today probabilistic forecasting is the wisdom of crowds, right? You have to have a good crowd to be able to get a good probabilistic estimate. And some of our fellow forecasters were virologists, and they highlighted this particular thing. So we had a question. Whether will the WHO declare a pandemic? And the rates of that forecast, the probabilities are significantly high before everything, before the public sort of really caught onto this. And that, on a personal level, enabled me, for example, to be much more cautious and get the protective equipment and all that other stuff, expecting that we might be in a position where we have a global pandemic. And we also would like to believe that we contributed to some of the public health measures, because we did then did a number of forecasts for some public agencies in the US that then utilized that with their public health measures later on. I think that's the one that would really resonate with a lot of people. But we also see similar things when we teach forecasting and then see them being applied in different scenarios, be it Russia's recent invasion of Ukraine, be it in the issues of Arctic, et cetera, be it in the classroom or with other clients.
Excellent. And before we go more into looking at the tension and the comparison between foresight and forecasting, I think we should spend a bit more time to unpack what those two approaches are really about. So let's start with the forecasting, Balkan. So from your perspective, what is forecasting?
So when I talk about forecasting, I primarily refer to assigning specific probabilities or probability ranges to an outcomes. This outcomes could be binary, yes or no, could happen or didn't happen. Or it could be multinomial. It could be assigning specific probabilities from a range of options. At the very basic level, this is the way one thinks about it. You can get a little bit more technical and sophisticated and can engage in continuous probability forecasts where you can assign a continuous probability of 5% to 95% if there is an actual number that you can assign. When it comes to quantities, etc. But to me, the essence of contemporary forecasting is about assigning specific probabilities to outcomes, which means that you need to have a clear, precise, and falsifiable question that you can ask. Will X happen by Y date, right, for example? And then you can say yes or no. That is really the essence of when we think about, at least in the defense, finance, international security, intelligence sectors, that is really the essence of forecasting.
Excellent. And I think it's a good way to turn to foresight, because beyond 5 years, I think that's where foresight has something to say. So over to you, Donna. So from your perspective, what is foresight?
So when I explain foresight, I usually talk about the skill of anticipation, really anticipating not just short-term, because there's different understanding of anticipation. So most, when they anticipate the future, they're really anticipating what will happen. They're trying to predict, in a sense, what will happen. But foresight is not about predictions. Right. At least the way I practice it in my the work that I do. Foresight, when you look at Futures Literacy Framework, right, put out by UNESCO, and they talk about the role of anticipation, foresight really starts with emergence. And it's understanding change. And it's understanding how the system is changing. So the idea is it's a sense-making element. It's understanding variables, what's new, what's emerging, and how those emerging issues or weak signals can be influential in the future. So it's a means of trying to make sense of the landscape and to be able to, through that sense-making, to understand how that could shift, what are some of the consequences of those changes, how they can interact in different ways, create disruptions, turbulence in the system. This is all part of just understanding and making sense of the landscape. And it really embraces uncertainty. It allows you to kind of jump into uncertainty, recognizing that as we move away from today and we, you know, think about the future, there is more uncertainty, there is more complexity, and so we have to embrace that and more try to approach it from an understanding of what's changing and what that could look like from maybe a risk, threat, disruption. But there could be also new emerging opportunities on the horizon that you could leverage and you could combine in different ways to give you perhaps an advantage, or maybe it's a new way of using innovation or technology that could transform maybe or adapt your current way of working. So that's how I explain it. It's more about understanding change, embracing emergence, and foresight is used a lot for adaptation and transformation.
Excellent. And what is the mindset behind it?
It's a different way of thinking, because it's a lot of questions I get from people who are very familiar with forecasting think that we can predict the future long term, and so it's stepping away from that predicting the future. And it's all about understanding that the future is emerging and it's unfolding, and that we have agency for change to shape the direction. So it's a different mindset, because it lends itself to a growth mindset, an innovation mindset, and a mindset for change and exploring what those opportunities could, how they could unfold.
Excellent. So I think now we have a better understanding of the foresight as an approach to future thinking, and forecasting as an approach to future thinking. Now there's a reason why they are different. There is a reason why some prefer forecasting and others prefer foresight. And obviously, as we listen to you, there's also a time factor, depending on, if your organization is working in a very more shorter timeline, like say 6 months, 2 years, versus perhaps like those who are into forest development, that is much longer. So if we think about acquiring a new ship, then we think more in 30 years, and foresight may make more sense. But if we think about, let's say, the next rotation in Latvia, well, forecasting may make more sense because it's a shorter timeline. Now, let's get down to it, and let's start with you, Balkan. So how does the forecasting community perceive foresight as an approach?
I think it goes both ways in a way that I think there is there's misunderstandings in both sides, and I think we can definitely touch upon that. There's quite a superficial understanding coming from the futures foresight community when it comes to forecasting and what probabilistic forecasting is about. It's not really about time series or regression fitting, but making probabilistic judgments. But on the side of people who are engaging in forecasting, I think the sort of the primary misunderstanding when it comes to what foresight does is also to perceive it as just hand waving, right? Like there's four things that you come up with in your basement, and why it got there, right? So there is that level of dismissal, I would say, which is not necessarily helpful. But again, I think primarily comes from the fact that they try to address different problems, but also don't really necessarily engage with each other in a meaningful way. But again, I think it goes both ways. I mean, most of the understanding of forecasting is quite basic on the foresight community. Just basically don't know how the practice is. Most people engaging in geopolitical forecasting or geoeconomic stuff do not necessarily make a prediction about the most probable outcome. They are distributing a probability distribution about over multiple outcomes, as well as it's a continuous process. It's not one and done. You don't forecast on the likelihood of Russia invading Ukraine today and completely leave it out. You continuously update on that as things change on the ground, right? So that would be, I would say, the primary sort of misunderstandings on both sides, that there is very little in each community that they engage in you know, reading and attending and trying to understand different methodologies.
And it seems that, you know, because forecasting is so incurred into probability and all that, like, would you compare the tension as the same as between natural sciences and social sciences, for instance? Is it similar or is it the...
Perhaps. I mean, one of the reasons I don't want to necessarily compare it the exact same way, because the probabilistic thinking, unless you're, you know, real, you know, considering, say, quantum mechanics, is not necessarily very much ingrained in a deterministic way of understanding natural sciences either. But forecasting is about probabilistic thinking. But I think the biggest sort of comparison one can make is whether the belief that you can actually have precise probability estimations over outcomes versus in the foresight community that what I tend to see is avoiding that question and putting out those potential futures without necessarily weighing them up in a way when it comes to likelihood versus impact, or whether, you know, you can talk about the desirability of it, different story, but without having a prioritization in a way, right? Mm-hmm. I think that would be the sort of the biggest differentiation. There seems to be a lot less differentiation in terms of which scenarios are more important that we need to pay attention to in the foresight compared to the probabilistic space, where you have a more clear probability distribution over outcomes, where you're more willing to engage in that sort of organization.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that all scenarios are equal, but some are more equal than others?
Yes. I always love Animal Farm, one of my favorite books, but that is exactly what it is, right? You cannot, to me, and that's one of the reasons why I tend to operate more in a forecasting space, is that because it is also about making decisions today. And making decisions today is about limited resources and unlimited desires. And if we don't have to make any prioritization, we don't have to make a decision. We can have everything. In order to make a decision, you have to prioritize. In order to prioritize, you need to understand which is likely to result in the biggest payoff. In order to understand the biggest payoff, you need to understand the probabilities that are central to it.
Excellent. And now back to the foresight community, Donna. So how does the foresight community in general perceive the forecasting community?
I would say that I agree with Balkan that there isn't a lot of mixing between the forecasting and foresight community. I'm probably one of the unique foresight professionals that you know, mix in both and understand both. But a lot of foresight practitioners, they work with futures, but they're very interested in transformation. And so you have a lot of scenarios, transform scenarios. They're really interested about a vision, a new vision to pull towards, and the agency to shape that future. And so they operate a lot with how to transform, how to change, how to do that, which I do enjoy that part. I think transformation is important. But a lot of my work is around understanding systems. And I, from the work that I've done and also from the research and understanding foresight, systems is the entry point to understand foresight. So to understand systems and to understand the parts that are not working, what's breaking down, are really good entry points to have conversations about change. And so so I tend to practice a little bit more on the just on the edge of forecasting, where it's kind of getting into systems, understanding breakdown of systems, but opportunity to shift the conversation, whether that's incremental adaptation or transformation. But I know that some foresight practitioners, they do talk about risk, but it's in a very different way. It's not quantified in terms of likelihood or impact. It's, they don't necessarily look at their scenarios and decide which one is more probable or the best course. They look at it, well, what do we want to shape? What do we want to create? And then what's the pathway to get there? And so the decisions about that pathway help to inform changes for today. What decisions do we have to make today if we want to create that future? If we want to, you know, shape it in that direction, what do we have to do differently? So it's a very different landscape.
You know, I observe that, for instance, if you look at the Policy Horizons, which is a government of Canada think tank that is specializing in foresight, in their foresight meta, they spend a lot of efforts trying to contrast their approach, foresight, with forecasting. Why do you think that they feel they need to precise that what they are doing is not forecasting?
There's just so much confusion on terminology. I think that, and even within the foresight community, I've heard foresight professionals talk about forecasting the future, predicting the future, and predicting long term. And so the language is important in the work that we do. And so I think there is sometimes language is used differently, and there can be confusion about what people mean by that. And so I think they are trying to help clarify that, because there are a lot of professionals that practice or are familiar with forecasting. That short-term predictive mindset is really, a lot of us have that short-term bias. It's kind of ingrained in us, and it's sometimes a little bit difficult to think long-term, you know, and to practice that. So I think maybe that's why they're trying to clarify the distinction between each one and the value of each. And both bring tremendous value. You know, moving forward, I've read a number of articles about the ambidextrous CEO, the ambidextrous organization that can see things and understand short term, make decisions from a probabilities perspective, but then it can also do the foresight piece and think longer term about what's changing and where the opportunities lie and how they want to shape that and how they want to position themselves. So I think they're probably following that lead.
Hmm. Excellent. Balkan, you allude often that from your perspective, forecasting and foresight are like the yin and the yang. So how can they be friends from your perspective? Like, how do you bring them together in your own practice?
I think, like I said, they are inherent in each other. It's about the emphasis on what you're doing it. And on my side, when I have the freedom and the time and the resources to think about a particular problem and its specific future, I tend to start with the tools of foresight. I start with scanning. I start with identifying drivers. I start mapping things to get a sense of first what is out there now, what might be out there, what might be driving those changes, what are the weak signals. Can we get a better picture as much as possible? It's not going to be very clear. It's going to be blurry. It's uncertain. But we can get a better sense of out there. So I will tend to start with that. And then, because we need to make a decision, Right? We need to make decisions today. And decisions are about, even if you want to transform, right? Even if you want to, and I agree with Donna in the sense that foresight is a lot more about transformation and getting somewhere you want to go. And forecasting tends to be about, you know, leave that normative part or decision-making part outside and basically give the options or the inform the decision rather than the shape the decision. But then you can, once you map that out, and then you can start seeing how and to what extent certain events, event spaces, configurations are possible. What are the probabilities that you can attach to them? And then, of course, if you want to make a decision, that's the decision maker's role to see if they want to increase or decrease the probability of certain things happening and what needs to be the intervention points. And again, I think foresight then comes again, back again. So it is an iterative process. You look it out, you then map the probabilistic distribution of those things, how likely these things are happening. And then the decision maker can look at, okay, what do we need to do? What do we need to change? So that the probability of a bad thing going down and the probability of good things going up. And then you bring in the foresight again and then understand the changes. And then you do the forecasting again. So it is a continuous process. I think one of the biggest sort of misunderstandings in the broader public as well is that this is not a static thing. This is not one and done. Here is the shelf and nobody reads it. It needs to be a continuous process that as events, drivers, conditions change, you continuously engage with it. So to me, those are, in that sense, very much inherent. You cannot ask good questions if you don't know what are the possibilities out there that requires foresight. But you cannot engage in foresight if you don't already have an implicit understanding of a probability distribution. You're already excluding things from the probable, you know, cone, right? You're already excluding things from the drivers and other things. There are 28,000 weak signals. You're already eliminating things. Why not do it explicitly rather than implicitly? So it's very much integrated.
Excellent. And what about you, Donna? You mentioned that you were using a bit of forecasting. So how can they be friends in your world?
I think they're complementary, and I integrate, like Balkan, I integrate it in my work. Some of the type of work that I do requires understanding of likelihood and impact. And so there is a probability element here. It might not be as the same type, you know, of there's different types of forecasting. So, but it's, I think it's complementary because there is information that we have confidence in. And there are patterns that have historical trends that we can say with confidence, yes, this likelihood of this happening is X, and this is the impact and the consequence. And that's helpful. When you have that information, you can make decisions based on that. And that's important to make decisions today with what we know. But sometimes with that type of forecasting, you're limited to the amount of variables you can explore. There can be some blind spots. And so it's understanding the limitations of it. And at the edge of those limitations, you could start to see where foresight can help fill in the gaps. Where are the areas that are changing? There's uncertainty, but you can't forecast it. You know, it doesn't lend itself to a forecasting, you know, methodology or a way of doing it. So then you can start to explore in a different way. And that's where foresight helps you to understand that landscape of change. Like Balkan was saying, there is a methodology in foresight called horizon scanning. And it's understanding the macro environment. It's getting a bigger systems level picture of what's driving change. And those drivers are based on historical data trends, right? So that's an important part of the foresight process, is understanding those drivers, understanding that knowledge, and then understanding how that could evolve, right? And emerge in different ways.
Excellent. And last question, which is, I think, fitting with a podcast on future thinking. What do you think is going to be the future of your respective approaches. So let's start with you, Balkan. What do you think is the future of forecasting in defense and security?
I tend to be, I believe these things are cyclical. When people feel that the world is more uncertain and dangerous, there tends to be much more interest in these methodologies, despite the fact that the world is always uncertain. It doesn't today became more uncertain. It was always that way, but it's just the perception that changes. So in the next 7 to 10 years, I would say that there will be more and more interest in forecasting, because people are going to recognize and realize and live the uncertainty much more than they recognize it 20 years ago, despite the fact that life was uncertain at the time too. But as long as that recognition continues, there will be an increasing demand. But like I said, this is cyclical, and people tend to go back and then go up and go back and then go up.
And where are we right now on the cycle?
We are on the
going up.
Yeah, going up. Okay, there's good. More and more interest.
So if it's going to go up and up again, and that your forecasting is going to be wrong, and that it's going to stay strong. And back to you, Donna. What do you think is the future of foresight in defense and security?
Well, I think I'm seeing a lot more interest in foresight, specifically for helping to understand complexity and uncertainty, especially around anticipatory strategic intelligence, like from an intelligence standpoint, really making sense of that and developing new insights of how things can emerge, evolve, disruption, and scenarios that are focused around that and exploring disruption, those potential future operating environments, and being able to map that out and to really kind of stress test, right? I see that. I see the interest in that growing. However, I think that it's really important that, those that are interested in foresight and interested in practicing it, whether it's a smaller project or a large project, that they get the practical benefits, the insight out of it, and it helps to inform actions for change. Because I see a lot of foresight projects that become more academic than practical strategy suggestions or recommendations or even ideas for potential strategy or innovation. And so I think that, this is an interesting time in terms of the practice, how we're using the tools, how we're extracting information, how we're using that information. If it's not creating value added, it will definitely fall away. and because it can be very time intensive to do some of these activities. And if you're not seeing the value, then you're going to eliminate it. And you need to be patient while you're learning. So hopefully it will be more on the practical side. That's my hope for the future.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Donna and Balkan, for having shared your wisdom on the forecasting and foresight. It's clearly clear in my mind, what is the difference between these approaches and what are the strength and limits of each of them, what are the tensions between them, how they overlap and how they can be complementary to each other. So thank you so much again, and I hope that you enjoyed listening to this Tension series podcast, and I look forward to host more again in the future. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.